HiBridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents DNA Demystified, Unraveling the Double Helix, by Alan McEwen. Read by Bob Sauer. Publisher's note: all figures referenced in this audiobook can be found in the print and ebook versions of this book. Preface. I work with DNA. This is my answer when asked at a social event, "What do you do for a living?" Invariably, the reply is some variant of, "Oh, wow, that's a fascinating topic. I wish I knew more about DNA, but it's so complex and my degree is in history, geology, law, and everything I read is either too technical or too simplistic." And I invariably wished I could hand them a suitable book. This is now that book. My own fascination with genetics, especially molecular genetics, started 50 years ago in high school. To be precise, grade 10 biology class. Most of my classmates, including me, were quickly confused, lost in the apparent enormity of the subject, from the complex helical structure to the varied and intricate functions of DNA. But our teacher, the large and imposing Mr. Hoban, reassured us. "Right now, gentlemen," he said to the all-boy class, "DNA seems like a whole lot of little bits of unconnected information. But persevere," he continued, "and you'll find those little pieces will start coalescing, fitting together like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. And ultimately, gentlemen, you'll see the big picture." Being 16 years old, none of us believed him. But being obedient, or perhaps intimidated, we persevered anyway. Most of us eventually found he was correct. The big picture DNA is logical, economical, and methodical, with almost everything about DNA fitting together and making sense. Yes, some basic technical terms require rote memorization, but once learned and applied within a few conceptual frameworks, DNA's big picture came clear. Many people share my fascination with DNA, albeit usually not enough to make molecular genetics a career objective. And some people don't share my enthusiasm for using our knowledge of DNA, via technology, to improve the human condition. After all, they might say, human history is littered with attempts to improve on nature that ended up making a mess. I reply there are, indeed, risks associated with all technologies. I endorse learning from past mistakes, then moving cautiously and judiciously forward, cognizant that not developing technology also carries risk. Today, as a molecular geneticist and public educator, I encounter many people who are fascinated by but equally fearful of DNA and what it means, particularly when we humans manipulate, modify, or engineer it. I appreciate that there is considerable apprehension among the public, but much anxiety is based on fearful misconceptions that can be allayed by fairly simple, factual, uncontroversial knowledge. This book explains what DNA is and how it adheres to ordinary laws of science and nature. This book is for the interested non-specialist who wants to better understand how DNA works as the genetic material for all living things. We start with an introduction to DNA, what it is and how it does the amazing things it does. The initial chapters span the range of awesome feats accomplished by DNA, along with what DNA is physically, chemically, and biologically. We also cover some historical background to some of the salient discoveries of DNA and its features. No doubt some critics will bemoan my omitting brilliant men and women who made important discoveries, and I accept this criticism. More complete histories are available elsewhere, and here I try to provide just the essential historical details to allow a better appreciation of the subsequent technical developments. DNA is not unique to Homo sapiens, but a chapter devoted to genetic features of our own species is in order because we humans are so self-centered and self-absorbed, and because so much DNA research is conducted for the benefit of humans. With a foundation laid in the first several chapters, we move to the second part of the book, focused on applications of DNA information. These chapters illustrate how DNA is used to address issues in various and diverse fields, from the sublime, for example, human origins, to the ridiculously mundane, for example, whose dog pooped on my lawn. We move then into personal DNA and genetics, exploring the recent explosion of interest in DTC, direct-to-consumer, DNA testing. What are the opportunities, and what are the limitations of such tests? Chapter 6 investigates health and medical issues revealed by DNA, and Chapter 7 opens Pandora's box of genetic genealogy and continues in more detail in Chapter 8. If you're interested in having your own DNA tested for genealogy, Chapter 9 provides some guidance in choosing a suitable test and company to conduct that test based on your specific interests and motivations. The final section of the book delves into rewriting the DNA recipes. We cover the promise, or perhaps the specter, of genetic engineering, GMO crops and foods, and genome editing to produce custom babies. This leads into some uncomfortable ethical issues deriving from DNA knowledge and technology. We wrap up with a non-technical discussion of the role of human understanding of genetics and modification of DNA. In 1998, Britain's Prince Charles, Prince of Wales, feared our newfound knowledge of DNA and modification. Takes mankind into realms that belong to God and to God alone. www.princeofwales.gov.uk/speech/article-prince-wales-title-seeds-disaster-daily-telegraph. 20 years later, we can revisit his angst to discuss whether his concerns were well-founded. Should we use DNA technologies to combat intractable diseases, famines, and climate change? Should we modern humans instead eschew knowledge and technology, returning to an entirely natural biological niche? Or is there a middle ground where we might judiciously apply at least some DNA technologies to serve a safer, healthier, more sustainable future? For those seeking more, the notes appended to each chapter provide sources and, where available, links to primary citations and technical papers, as well as links to news reports, blogs, and websites offering more accessible resources and explanations for the topic for further reading. All links were tested as active in early 2020, but be aware that web page content is ephemeral and can change or even disappear without warning. And now, settle in and get comfortable as we embark to demystify the awesome molecule of life, DNA. Introduction. That spirit of discovery is in our DNA. U.S. President Barack Obama, 2016 State of the Union Address. Introducing Nature's Rock Star, DNA. If you're mystified by DNA and genetics, relax. Settle into a comfy chair as we explain what DNA is and how it works its apparent magic, revealing it's not so magical after all. We'll also cover chromosomes, genes, and genomics, and how they impact our daily lives. These initial pages provide a quick overview of some common questions folks have about DNA, what it is, what you should know about it, where it comes from. If it seems like we're glossing over your favorite topic, be patient, as we'll explore these and many other topics in greater depth in the subsequent chapters. For now, settle in. It's time to unpack some mysteries and explode some myths while still marveling at the awesome star power of DNA. Like all celebrities, DNA carries a mystique. It is a compelling story combining remarkable skills with some manufactured hype. It's in our DNA is now a standard refrain for marketers and individuals trumpeting some essential virtue, honesty, courage, integrity, permanence, the spirit of discovery. The aura of DNA sells everything from colleges and companies to cars, electric fences, and even literary agents. The marketing hype is often misplaced, but DNA is undoubtedly a wondrous molecule. It's the only known molecule capable of reproducing itself and is present in all living things. DNA is indeed the essence of life itself. Between the presidential citations, popular television shows such as CSI, Crime Scene Investigation, and a multitude of gratuitous marketing cliches, almost everyone knows DNA, or at least they think they know about deoxyribonucleic acid, also known as DNA. The New York Times Index shows over 500 news articles on DNA in the first half of 2019 alone, an average of over 2 stories per day. Yet many otherwise well-informed readers don't know what DNA is or how it works. However, misunderstandings about DNA are common. They run from the abstract, since when did cars have DNA, to the specific. Mother Nature's species barrier ensures the DNA never transfers from one species to another. No, cars do not have DNA, and most of us know that. But many people mistakenly believe Mother Nature never moves DNA from one species to another. Scientific evidence proves that Mother Nature does indeed move DNA between species, and she does so often. Okay, so what is DNA again? Deoxyribonucleic acid is a chemical in the form of a thread-like molecule. All natural substances are chemicals, but even among those wary of chemicals, the DNA chemical inspires awe and wonder. Marvel, yes, but don't be intimidated. Understanding DNA and how it works is not difficult if we focus on the common principles and concepts. The physical structure of DNA is universal, shared by all living things. James Watson and Francis Crick first described the famous double helix in 1953, making them instant celebrities. A double helix is like a twisted ladder. The DNA ladder's side rails are its chemical backbone, consisting of a deoxyribose sugar attached to a phosphate. The ladder's rungs are composed of one pair of 4 chemical bases: adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine, abbreviated A, T, C, and G. Crucially, adenine, A, pairs only with thymine, T, and cytosine, C, only pairs with guanine, G. The space between the two backbones is precise and limited. The size of the bases allow only the pairs of A, T, and C, G to fit as rungs between the two backbones. To get a sense of what the DNA molecule physically looks like, imagine taking a plastic ladder from a child's toy fire engine and heating it gently in hot water until the plastic softens enough to become malleable. Remove the ladder from the hot bath and, taking an end in each hand, gently twist the ladder such that one complete twist is 10 rungs long. Let it cool in that shape. This is a double helix. The structure of DNA differs from our simple twisted ladder in that the DNA rungs do not attach perpendicular to the side rails. Instead, the atomic shape and bonding of the paired bases, both AT and CG, angle off the side rails at about 36 degrees, and this angling torques the side rails into a twisting spiral. This explains why DNA spirals into a double helix and why there are 10 base pairs in a complete 360-degree turn. The torque also produces the major and minor grooves. Also in DNA, the 2 sugar phosphate side rails are pointed in different directions, with one rail pointed in one direction and the other in the opposite direction. In chemical parlance, we say 5 prime to 3 prime, written as 5 single quote to 3 single quote. The complementary counterpart rail points 3 prime to 5 prime, see figure 1.1. The only reason to remember this orientation stuff is that most graphic depictions of a sequence of bases in a DNA strand run in the 5 prime to 3 prime direction. By convention, if you see a DNA sequence like GAATTC in text, it implies 5' GAATTC 3'. The complementary strand is not shown, but is understood to be 3' CTTAAG 5'. Figure 1.1 illustrates the DNA double helix features. Finally, the twist in the DNA of living things is right-handed, similar to a standard corkscrew. You can imagine inserting the tip of a corkscrew into a wine cork and twisting it clockwise, looking from above, which is the natural action of a right-handed person to drive the screw into the cork. If you look at the corkscrew from the side, you can readily imagine DNA having the same right-handed spiral. Here's a fun game to impress your friends. DNA is often depicted in graphical form in various non-technical newspaper or magazine articles and in social media. Since few graphic designers know or care about the correct DNA spiral direction, about half of DNA graphics show the double helix with the incorrect left-handed spiral, which does not exist in living things. Once you know the difference, a left-handed spiral in a graphic jumps out as incorrect. You'll be far too excited to restrain yourself from showing your friends, who will invariably marvel at your erudition. Get them to celebrate by opening a bottle of wine in your honor. Most of our human DNA is stored in chromosomes. Each chromosome is composed of one long ladder thread of DNA packed tightly with special protective proteins called histones. Each chromosome has a short arm, abbreviated P from the French petit, and a longer arm, Q, as that's the next letter in the alphabet. Why couldn't they just use L for long, conveniently consistent in both French and English? Too logical? The two arms are connected by a structure called the centromere. DNA is physically a double helix. It's also been described metaphorically as a long thread or a chain or sometimes a zipper. Each metaphor illustrates different aspects of the DNA molecule. The thread metaphor is helpful because if we extract the DNA molecule from any one human cell and stretch it out, it would appear as a very long, thin thread about 6.5 feet, 2 meters long in total. The chain metaphor is most apt when describing the links in the DNA double helix. In humans, for example, DNA consists of about 3.1 billion links of the genetic chain. Each chain link in this analogy, called a nucleotide, consists of the ladder backbone phosphate attached to a deoxyribose sugar, which is then attached to any of the A, T, C, or G bases. This is how we get the DNA sequence of, for example, GATTACA or Gattaca, not to give any prominence to the dreadful movie of that name. Because each link of the DNA chain consists of the phosphate stuck to the deoxyribose sugar backbone as well as the A, T, C, or G base attached to it, the backbone structure is not usually shown in base sequences, but it's understood to be present anyway, just as the complementing base pairs are not usually shown. For example, the short 7-base sequence, GATTACA, is understood to be attached to the sugar phosphate backbone, and each base is understood to be bonded to its pair on the complementary strand, that is, CTAATGT. But depicting this short sequence as 5' GC AT TA TA AT CG AT 3' is unnecessarily awkward and adds nothing to what we can readily deduce from the simpler GATTACA or Gattaca. DNA nucleotides can be linked together to form long chains of nucleotides that can be millions or even billions of links long. The genome, that is, the sum total of DNA in a cell of a living thing, can vary in the length of these chains. The genome of the common bacterium E. coli is 4.6 million nucleotide base pairs long. The chain length of DNA in the human genome is about 3.1 billion nucleotide base pairs long. The first major international public works project of the 21st century was the Human Genome Project, HGP. It was funded to analyze the human genome and has now painstakingly recorded letter by letter each link in the nucleotide base sequence of the human genome. Scientists call this letter by letter documentation sequencing the genome. The first human genome sequencing took about 15 years at a cost of about $3 billion. With technical advances and processing efficiencies, sequencing a human genome today takes about 18 minutes at a cost of a few hundred dollars. To put this into a more tangible context, consider a standard Christian Bible, the King James Authorized, for example. The text begins with a string of letters, "In the beginning," and ends with a different sequence of letters, be with you all, Amen, using the same pool of 26 letters in English, but arranged in a particular order to convey scriptural information. DNA uses only four letters, A, T, C, and G, but is otherwise similar in using the order of letters, the specific sequence, to convey information. The human genome DNA information sequence, starting with chromosome 1, is TCG, CGG, TACCC, TCAG, and finishes at the end of chromosome 21 with GGG, TTA, GGG, TTA, GGG. If we took all the letters in all the words of the King James Bible and strung them into a long chain, the full sequence would be 3.1 million letters long, divided into the 66 books of the Bible, starting with Genesis and ending with Revelations. The full base sequence of the human genome is about 3.1 billion base pairs long, stored in 23 pairs of chromosomes. In other words, the chain of DNA bases packed into the chromosomes in each and every nucleated cell in your body carries over 1,000 Bibles' worth of information. Finally, the zipper metaphor of DNA serves to illustrate what happens when DNA replicates, reproduces, or conveys genetic information. The DNA molecule unzips down the middle of the ladder, with each link's two complementary bases separating, like a zipper exposing a row of individual teeth. The DNA zipper opens one base pair at a time in sequence, just like a zipper, to expose the bases in their usual sequence. The bases are still held to their adjacent neighbor by the intact phosphate plus sugar backbone, just as an open zipper exposes the teeth, but the line of teeth on each side of the zipper remains intact. The reason the DNA zipper opens is to expose the ATCG sequence of bases to certain enzymes that precisely read the sequence of base letters. Enzymes are special proteins that perform specific chemical reactions. Depending on the exact enzyme present, the reaction with DNA may be to make a complementary copy to replicate or reproduce the DNA, or prepare to make a protein, called protein synthesis, as specified by the base sequence. What makes human DNA so special? Nothing, actually. The DNA in humans is not special compared with DNA in other species. Nevertheless, we tend to think in proprietary terms that human DNA belongs to us and is somehow fundamentally different from, and let us be honest, superior to DNA in fish or tomatoes. We may think DNA and corresponding genes from each species is separate, discrete, and unique. This thinking is simply wrong. Genes, segments of DNA, belong to no one species or group. Apart from a relatively few unique genes found only in a couple of species, most genes are common and found across many diverse living things. Sure, humans don't mate with fish or tomatoes in the usual sense, but they don't have to. Humans, fish, and tomatoes already share a substantial number of genes. DNA has the same structure and function, physically, chemically, and biologically, in every living thing. Recent advances in molecular genetics prove this genetic similarity, or common good, geneticists call it homology, to be true. Humans share substantial DNA sequences with other primates, and various studies show that we share substantial DNA homology with virtually all other animals, and even plants. What differs between human DNA and tomato DNA, or for that matter, the DNA between two humans, is the precise ordered sequence of DNA base pair building blocks, A, T, C, and G, in the same way two different recipes in an English language cookbook may use the same 26 letters to make words, but differ in the exact sequence of those same 26 letters to make different words. Similarly, we humans cannot claim any degree of superiority based on the quantity of DNA we carry. Our 23 pairs of chromosomes hold DNA consisting of 3.1 billion base pairs, giving a C-value, a standard measure of amount of DNA per cell, of 3.5 picograms. This amount is about the same as an average Periplemeta americana, the common cockroach. Nor can we measure superiority by numbers of chromosome pairs. Our 23 pairs are exceeded by many other species, including the 39 pairs in man's best friend, Canis familiaris. Perhaps we should cease treating them like dogs. When did DNA become so popular? DNA is now often in the news for a range of different reasons. But it wasn't always so popular. Science nerds and geeks held claim over DNA's popularity until it was thrust onto the public stage by a series of events in the mid-1990s, particularly O.J. Simpson's murder trial. The technology of DNA fingerprint evidence, previously unknown to the public, was introduced against the celebrity murder defendant. Were those DNA fingerprints left at the murder scene really his? The media spectacle of the O.J. trial was followed shortly by the announced cloning of Dolly the sheep, raising the specter of the technical feasibility of cloning humans, a science fiction nightmare. Then came the appearance on our dinner plates of genetically engineered crops and foods, the fearsome genetically modified organisms, GMOs. All of these high-profile stories were about the use, or perhaps abuse, of DNA. DNA amazes people, and that fascination continues to rise with the popularization of TV shows, especially CSI and its spin-offs, in which DNA is often the star of the show, catching bad guys who conveniently but perhaps unknowingly left their DNA fingerprints at their crime scene. But while adding to the appeal and mystique of DNA, these shows are primarily for entertainment. They sometimes sacrifice technical authenticity to fit the story arc into a 50-minute TV slot. These unrealistic aspects of TV shows have given rise to what is called the CSI effect. Jurors in murder trials want DNA evidence. I hear this when I teach a continuing legal education, CLE, workshop called Science for Judges and Lawyers. It's not unusual for prosecutors to complain that juries won't convict without DNA evidence. Criminal defense lawyers similarly complained that their client can't be acquitted if DNA evidence is presented. It's almost as if jurors are thinking to themselves, if the DNA fits, you must convict. This gives far too much evidentiary leverage to DNA. One unrealistic aspect in CSI and similar TV shows is the technical timing. A tiny blood sample is found at the scene of the crime and analyzed for DNA fingerprinting, and the suspect is arrested before he's out of the shower next morning. While it's true that the standard DNA fingerprinting assay itself runs overnight, the chain of custody processing and technical preparation prior to actually running the sample add considerably to the processing time. So do the mundane bureaucratic details like blood, semen, and other samples backed up in overworked DNA processing labs short of funding for equipment, supplies, and trained technicians. Other unrealistic aspects include the notion that DNA evidence is invariably present at a crime scene and invariably helpful in identifying suspects and then determining guilt or innocence. DNA's TV celebrity is not limited to crime scene evidence. DNA is also the star of The Maury Show, a popular daytime spectacle offering DNA testing of putative fathers of children with uncertain parentage. DNA testing makes paternity certain one way or the other. Another so-called reality TV show cashing in on the popularity of DNA as pop icon is America's Most Wanted presents Judgment Night, the ultimate test. The results of DNA analyses of convicted felons who've proclaimed innocence are revealed on live TV to exonerate, or not exonerate, their conviction. DNA features in other TV shows as well. Tracing family ancestry and building genealogical trees started in the United Kingdom with the BBC's Who Do You Think You Are? And in the United States with PBS's Finding Your Roots with Henry Louis Gates, Jr. Both series are now several seasons strong. And DNA is not solely a TV star. The non-televised Innocence Project often relies on DNA to exonerate those who've been falsely convicted of a crime. No one claims our criminal justice system is perfect. It's widely known that sometimes the innocent are sent to jail for crimes they didn't commit. DNA is now proving a valuable tool in correcting the errors. As of early 2020, the Innocence Project claims 367 exonerations based on DNA testing since 1992 and 162 real perpetrators identified. The rocketing popularity of DNA is reflected in the rise of direct-to-consumer DNA testing. For a relatively small fee, several companies will conduct a DNA analysis from the cells in your cheek swab or spit sample. The analyses will reveal your ethnic background and connect you with your biological family. Ancestry DNA, a branch of the genealogical site Ancestry.com, sold 2 million DNA testing kits in the Thanksgiving sale of 2017 alone, and after record sales in 2018, it claims over 15 million DNA kits sold. By early 2019, 23andMe claimed over 10 million customers. MediaCenter.23andMe.com/company/about-us. In all, almost 30 million DNA
sample complete. Ready to continue?